everyone. My name is Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, listeners. So happy you're with us.
And on the political right, John Dougal.
Great to be with you again.
Hey, around town, some people have been talking to me about the program, and I met someone the other day that really likes you, John, on the program.
Wow, thank you.
And wants to hear what you're going to say.
There's got to be one person out there. Thank you so much.
But what a big day in news. We're recording this on Tuesday. Last night.
This is Veterans Day.
At about 11:40 p.m.
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 The homework was due at midnight, and
yes,
the judge ruled at 11:40.
This is 3rd District Judge Diana Gibson, who ruled on the congressional maps. My goodness. I think it's like a 90-page ruling, something like that.
Well, she ruled on it, but don't hide the story. I mean, she shot down the legislature's map.
The extremely gerrymandered legislature's
map. The easy decision.
And picked the League of Women Voters gerrymandered map.
Okay.
Yeah, well, here we go.
I mean, I served on a redistricting commission when Utah was the possibility of getting a 4th seat and we had a draw for a Democrat. I mean, it was substantially what the League of Women Voters drew. So don't tell me it's not gerrymandered.
Yeah, I guess I will just say for all of us who have had to be gaslit by the notion that the state has to be cut into pizza pies slices for some absurd reason.
Urban and rural mix.
Yeah.
You and your donut holes.
However you want to say it. What I am grateful for is that we had a process that started well over a decade ago where Utahns gathered together, collected tens of thousands of signatures to put Proposition 4 for better boundaries on the ballot in front of Utahns, asking them, do you think politicians should be able to pick you or should it go the other way around? Should you be able to pick your representation? That went to the voters. I believe it passed with 54%. And
I think it was 50.4.
50.4?
It was very, very close.
Okay, let's just say you would consider that a majority if it was on your side of things. Mm-hmm. So they won. They won that vote. And then from there, this legislature has been working, honestly, it feels like session after session, day and night, to undermine the ability to have fair maps. Mm-hmm. So, and I know, John, you're going to say this isn't fair, like fair's in the eye of the beholder. You've been sending Q texts about it. But then, fine, let's take a couple rounds at this and see if we can get some better representation that is competitive, that is not pulling us further and further and further to the right. I think we have actually a bright future with a fairer map.
Yeah. John, I'm sure you have a lot to add there, but I want to ask you a couple questions. Are we in a constitutional crisis in our state right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And tell us why.
We're in a place where, one, the legislature doesn't understand what it was that the Supreme Court said about initiatives. And so, you know, I've talked about this before. There's constitutional language, there's statutory language, and now there's this third thing I'm going to refer to as super statute that, you know, the legislature can amend it if there's a compelling interest, but not otherwise. You know, it all goes into, you know, what strict scrutiny the court applies to any change the legislature might apply. But then you step back, and from the legislative perspective, when you look at Article 9, Section 1 of the Constitution, it says the legislature will draw the congressional districts. From the legislative perspective, that's where they're looking, going, this isn't shared legislative power between the people and the legislature. From their perspective, they say that specifically says the legislature. And so then you step back and see a judge who, from their perspective, went and didn't pick the legislature's map, didn't even pick a map from the redistricting commission, went and picked a map, map one, from the League of Women Voters, and I don't know what their basis is to have the judge adopt their map. Yeah, I would say we're in a constitutional crisis.
Interesting. Okay. So, but this is what I don't understand from the political middle. Since our last program, since this issue's been flaring, I found myself downloading the Utah Constitution. I found myself reading parts of it. What was I doing? But I wanted to read the sections that speak to the people's right to reform their government, and then the section that says it is the legislature's job to do this. And both of those exist in the Constitution clear as day.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a tension here. And so when someone quotes, oh, it's the legislature's right to do this, they're missing that there's also the people's right to reform their government. And at the same time, the people's right to reform their government need to understand it's a legislative role. And I just feel like...
Well, legislative or legislature's role, depending on the case
and,
might be.
I just feel like... So here's a question. Who's elected statewide in this state that has a lot of leadership stature?
The auditor?
The governor.
Everyone knows it's
Could
the auditor.
Could not the governor put these people in a room and say, you know, we've got these two things in tension. Figure it out. Because I know if the groups had agreed on a map, that's what the judge would have picked. They just left her no choice. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see that. It would require having the kind of leadership that I do feel like we lack in this moment.
Yeah.
Honestly, I do.
I mean, it needs someone to step up.
Yep.
I'm going to sit here, and this language was in the judge's opinion. So it said, Map 1 has neither the purpose nor effect of unduly favoring or disfavoring a political party. Okay? And I come from the perspective, I look at that and go, I look at the map and go, that statement is bunk.
Mm-hmm.
Bunk from my perspective. Because I can look at the map. I don't have to have any partisan data. And I can say that map is hardcore for three Republican seats.
Is it a
and
community
one,
of interest?
One for Democrat
does
seats.
Does it follow political boundaries?
Well, I'm just saying the statement that says it doesn't unduly favor or disfavor a political party. No, that map was drawn to favor three seats for the Republicans, one seat for the Democrat. It was drawn clearly to favor.
Can you not also agree, though, that Salt Lake County is a community of interest? I mean, I get it that, yes, they may be more liberal or more moderate than the rest of the state, but they have a common interest that would allow you to say, put them together. You can isolate Salt Lake County for nonpartisan reasons.
And that may be the case. I'm just saying to make a statement that says it's not favoring or disfavoring is like, that's fantasy land. That's fantasy.
But those are the things you started, the aisle has said to us repeatedly.
You've started with Salt Lake City and you've drawn everything anchored around Salt Lake City. You would have a very different outcome if you anchored it in Provo and drew it from there or anchored it in Ogden
and drew it from there. Yeah, but it's the urban center. I mean, it's different than Provo. Which means
you believe it's okay to gerrymander in favor of that outcome.
I just question whether it's gerrymandering if you're following political boundaries of a community of interest, because you can draw those boundaries blind to the partisan, you know, makeup and come up with that map. So you can call it partisan, but I do know Salt Lake County has a lot in common with itself.
Yeah.
Okay, now, so Shireen, a lot of women involved here.
Oh, yeah.
Lieutenant Governor Henderson said she's going to follow the law, and she's the one that set the November 10th deadline, and she's now setting up the elections to proceed
for
2026.
I actually do think she is a leader in our state.
So okay. I just take my previous statement back a little bit.
But go ahead.
You just look at this, and you got Diana Gibson, you got L.G. Henderson, you got the League of Women Voters, Mormon Women for Ethical Government. Even on the Republican side, Candace Perucci, representative, who's the co-chair of the legislative redistricting, there's a lot of women deciding Utah's future here.
Yeah. Well, dare we say maybe about time? That could be fun. I also just think for me, what I see is a very deep group of committed individuals across the groups that I know a little bit better, the Mormon Women for Ethical Government and the League of Women Voters. These are people who have been involved in community work, in voter registration, in trying to increase, I think, people's interest and information around an informed public for many, many years now. And I am really grateful for the work that they are doing.
Yeah. All right. So how does this play out? They're going to appeal this, I'm sure.
Yes. We already have appeals going on, but I think they're going to appeal this. There's no question.
Okay.
Because the legislature feels like...
And John, in your opinion, how does it work given that we're basically a year out from the 2026 elections and you've got to give the potential candidates the ability to start campaigning and you can't let this go for many more weeks?
So the lieutenant governor basically said they had to have the opinion from the judge on the 10th and she got it in at 1140 because maps have to be drawn. Precinct maps and everything all throughout the counties because candidates start signing up January 2nd.
Yeah.
And so we are less than 2 months away from candidates signing up. And that's, it's a short timeline. Now, some of the challenges are, okay, is the legislature going to appeal this? Yeah. I expect no question today they'll be filing an appeal. I mean, they've got to do it like now.
An appeal will go to the Supreme Court.
But the challenge they have is currently we have no map. The judge struck down the original map that we had. Okay. So now we have this new map that's going to get challenged, you know, if they rush quickly, you know, if it gets put on hold, now what do you fall back to? And the legislature can't respond quick enough. And so we're in this weird situation, which is how would the courts proceed forward? And the courts aren't known for moving quickly.
But
courts, generally are thought of as so being more thoughtful, but not quick.
The appeal goes to the Supreme Court, correct?
Correct.
I think it depends on who they might appeal to.
Okay, but
because there's an appellate court.
If it gets to the Supreme Court, what do they do, and what happens if they rule in favor of this Judge Gibson?
Well, my understanding is that the court had ruled on the language about initiatives, and you know, when I referred to this super statute that the legislature is wrestling with, in essence, they decided that. I don't believe they decided whether or not
the judge could
itself or the judge could pick this map or anything like that. So that's a whole different matter.
Well,
because what we have right now is, in essence, the judge picked the map.
Yeah.
And the legislature is going to say, constitutionally, that's our responsibility.
Yeah. All right.
And so then you've also got the, you know,
it's just chaos. It's
a mess. Somebody, I think, has already filed a bill to look into possibly impeaching the judge.
And I just want
to
say,
thus to your constitutional crisis.
This is Representative Matt McPherson, who has opened a bill filed to impeach this judge. And I just will say, this person sits in West Valley City and will be up for election. So just putting that out there, too.
Hey, in the 30 seconds or so that we have left, maybe we'll push it into the other section. But doesn't Ben McAdams' name loom large here?
It certainly does. There are others,
I think
there,
he
loomed
larger with the math the legislature drew. I think
so
he had a better chance there.
Let's take a short break, okay, and then let's start off with Ben McAdams. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Shireen Gourbani, John Dougal, Natalie Gochner. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal, redistricted on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the political center. We want to talk about some of the elected officials that this could
Who's going to run?
In redistricting. And a couple that come right off the top of the tongue. Ben McAdams, former legislator that didn't prevail against
Burgess.
Yeah, Representative Owens. And then Senator Kathleen Reby, both have sort of put their names out there.
Yeah.
There's some other names. What are you hearing?
Well, I mean, I'll just say it feels like there are maybe a few other Democrats in the Senate, in our state Senate, who are interested or trying to raise their profile. Nate Bluen comes to mind. I think there are, rumors is probably too strong, but I would assume that people are thinking individuals like Aaron Mendenhall may be looking at this seat. I think.
How about even Mayor Wilson? Throwing it out there.
Yeah, right.
I'm just thinking that these very capable and name ID kind of women, that if there was a seat that was competitive, they might throw their hat in.
Yeah. I will just say that for me, I know that there are a lot of folks that, I mean, I came out of nowhere too, right? Mm-hmm. That are sort of, that have already said that they're running. I'll just say, I do hope that we run a strong slate everywhere.
Yeah.
Because it really did matter, I think, in 2018 to have strong candidates running across the entire state in all the seats. I think, again, that it's good for our politics. I think it forces some of these Republican representatives who, frankly, never show up on doorsteps, who very rarely engage in kind of public discourse around elections because they know they're in safe seats. It forces them to engage. And I think all of that is better to the process. The question that I think is more interesting here is, how will the Republicans reshuffle in this?
Yeah.
Well, before you go there.
Yeah.
I think Map C was drawn to Ben McAdams' advantage. And the fact that the judge shot it down and went with map one, I think hurts Ben's chances. I think he could have won one of two seats in map C. There were two seats that I thought leaned lightly Republican, mm-hmm, but were
like he does. Like he does.
Yeah.
I mean, he has some aspects of right of center.
But what I hear from some Democrats is, you know, with him endorsing Evan McMullen and other things like that, he may not be Democrat enough for this hardcore Democrat seat that was just drawn.
I guess maybe I would just say, and part of this is just time I've spent with him and knowing a little bit more about his background, but really look at what he did tried to do around homelessness. What his plan that he put forward is very different than what we ended up with. And honestly, is quite progressively minded. I think about the commitment that he has to protecting people's access to healthcare. I think about the work that he did on criminal justice reform. There are many things about his politics that lean left, but they also are responsible governance. I don't know. It's like a frustrating thing to try to convince people
that there's a difference between those two when you don't think there is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and for a long time, I'm going to say from my perspective, lots of these congressional seats and other seats that lean Republican, Democrats didn't really have a competitive primary at all. You know, they'd have one person, they'd anoint that one person to run. oftentimes that person was a sacrificial lamb in the process.
Yeah.
Now, if we have map one, if that's the one that continues, I'm hoping that the Democrats have some competitive process for how they pick
yeah.
who's going to be that
yeah.
person.
And I just also want to add, somebody like Kathleen Reby has been a longtime educator in our state. She has been up close with families and the challenges that they're having. She has seen what the defunding, the devaluing of our education system has done firsthand. I think she's a fierce advocate for Utahns in the legislature. Like, we have a number of great people mm-hmm. that are going to step up for this, and yeah. I'm really excited about that.
So looking at John, because he's on the right, John, yeah. this really mixes up the legislative
we
races.
We have four Republican congressmen yeah, yeah. and women.
Yeah.
And
they have to figure out which one is in which. And our listeners, just to remind you, you don't have to live in the district you represent. And so you put out four new districts and we've got these four Republican representatives. How do they figure out which one they go in?
I don't know. They might get together and talk and
you don't,
figure
are you,
out.
Yeah. I'm not, are you I'm an not incumbent if you're running in a different district than you started in?
Sure are. As kind, long as you kind continue of, to vote against kind, people's health care.
Kind of sort of incumbent, but kind of sort of not, because yeah. I don't know how they put that on.
So if I did these one by guides, one, but, you think Burgess Owen runs again, John?
I don't know. I
okay,
mean,
that was kind of question my mind.
It's one of those where, you know, I'm hearing rumblings, you know, sometime in the near future he was going to retire.
Yeah.
So I don't know when the timing of that is.
I hear Representative Blake Moore's name a lot for Utah governor.
Hmm, interesting.
I know. So you could see some moving chairs there. Celeste Malloy.
Interesting, because I thought he was eyeing the U.S. Senate like there's no tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, that could be too.
That would shift it.
Celeste Malloy, she would do well in a
speaker.
Swing. In one
would
of the
she? Swinger. She pretty much has been totally fine with gutting people's access to health care. So
I
see about
she,
that.
I think she does fine in a swing seat, but Map 1 does not have swing seats.
Yeah. Okay. And then Representative Mike Kennedy.
Yeah.
He'll run again, yes. And,
I would anticipate, but that's where, you know, his seat, you know, you can look and say, okay, a lot of that stayed the way it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, if I go up to the 30,000 foot level and think about where we've been, where we're going, it used to be a given that you had a Matheson, a McAdams, someone from the Democratic Party representing one in three or one in four districts. Mm-hmm. And then we've had this slate of all Republicans. And it looks like we're going back.
Yeah. And just from your perspective, yeah. having worked for governors, uh-huh. having worked in state politics a really long time, not that you haven't, John, but from where you've been sitting, talk to me about, do you think that's a benefit to the state?
Having a Democrat in Washington?
Yeah.
I think it's always helpful to have both parties back there.
Yeah.
Because you never know who's going to be in leadership. And it's helpful to have someone. It doesn't have to represent you. I tend to look at this as less partisan and less the character of the people that you send back there. And I think if you're a good character person on either party, you can accomplish great things.
Yeah.
I think one of the dynamics is for a long time, and it's changed recently, but the Democratic message, the national Democratic message did not sell in Utah. Mm-hmm. It was a losing message. And so the Republicans, rightly so, dominated the state. I think a lot of Utahns struggle with Donald Trump
yeah.
and his message. So therefore, that's weakened that Republican message, and it doesn't sell to the swing voters like it used to, or those that lean lightly Republican. They don't favor that message.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't say the Democrat message is stronger, but the Republican message is weaker, which then puts them more on, you know, not parity, but has shifted that balance.
Guarantee listeners will talk about this again next week.
Yeah, there'll be more news.
Hey, since you brought up President Trump, there's so many things we can always talk about there, but let's talk about the Trump administration giving these additional massive tax breaks to the uber wealthy.
Oh, thank you. This is under
the radar notices.
So I know that you are bringing this up just because I asked for it, but I did think this was a truly stunning story that was in the New York
Times. Shereen loves her tax breaks.
I do, yeah. That was really talking about the ways that the ultra-wealthy and large corporations continue to basically be on the take from the American people. And there was a piece of legislation passed under Biden that would have projected to bring $222 billion over 10 years back to the, well, into our government. And this is really looking at corporations like Amazon, Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson that are basically able to disclose these they say that they have a loss mm-hmm. while shoveling out mega dollars to mm-hmm. their shareholders, right? Mm-hmm. And this, I think it's, I need people to understand, we're talking about that $222 billion over 10 years on that is going back into their pockets. And that's on top of the $4 trillion that was part of the billionaire bailout, H.R. 1, that, again, every single one of our representatives, so Blake Moore, Celeste Malloy, Mike Kennedy, Burgess Owens, were all totally fine supporting. And so this is where I know I I know that I'm, well, in the minority here and in this state. But when we talk about Democrats' message not being popular with Utahns, I think it's not popular with Utahns to see these kinds of corporations continue to get handouts while we know that Utahns are struggling to make ends meet.
So I'm going to draw a line, a distinction in there. First of all, I'm going to note that corporations don't really pay tax.
Okay.
Their customers pay the tax, employees pay the tax, the shareholders pay the tax.
That's what I teach in my public finance class.
Yeah, but in and of itself, corporations don't pay taxes. But then when you talk about these breaks, one of the questions in my mind is this a reduction of their tax, which I think is good policy, or is this some other subsidy that's taking place? Because I hate the subsidy of corporations.
Right.
I have absolutely no problem with eliminating their taxes because I don't think they pay taxes in the first place.
Well, okay. So, but in this administration, understand that we are talking about massive subsidies as well. And then we're also talking about large corporations. We were just, before recording, talking about how there are companies like Walmart that intentionally depress the value of their workers and force them to be on government programs like SNAP. This is, it's just well, like
they
for
don't,
me.
They don't force them on, but Walmart has structured a business. Walmart has structured a business model that's based on the federal government's welfare programs, and the welfare programs are dysfunctional, which rewards the behavior. And you and I share the concern.
Agree on that.
Yes, but I don't think it's Walmart's fault. I think it's the fault of the federal government how they structure the welfare programs that allow and reward this kind of behavior.
John, how about I'm just doing a quick transition here, but how about the decision of the Supreme Court not to hear the appeal on the Obergefell same-sex marriage? Mm-hmm. Issue.
I think to a certain extent, from their perspective, it's a bygone and, you know, what's the point?
Wow, interesting.
I mean, it's kind of refreshing to think that we could think that it's a bygone and let people live their lives and that love is love and move forward.
I would hope so, but I actually am not. I am grateful for this news, but I'm actually wondering if this is just the wrong case. And I would just ask people to remain vigilant around this issue.
Yeah, that's fair. Well,
unfortunately.
The Kentucky County Clerk is not a good plaintiff.
No.
We got an email from a listener who wanted to talk about ACA subsidies and SNAP and income inequality and what is it from an economist perspective that what the federal government should be doing? Was that the way you guys heard
maybe
that?
Maybe a more humane way that we could do this? What do you think?
Well, I just raised the point. Whenever I'm asked about how do we help with socioeconomic disparities, my mind goes directly to education. That's the number one place I go, whether it's, you know, pre-childhood education investment, whether it's investment in K-12 schools, whether it's investment for people to have post-secondary education.
Yeah.
That's the best way we can help with inequality.
But that's a long term, not a short term.
Yeah, that's right.
It doesn't solve anything for tomorrow.
Yeah, except that you pile on with that some of these market-based things like earned income tax credits, some of the things that have been shown to be effective.
Oh, I love that. And that are measured.
Yeah.
I'm a nerd for that one.
Are you?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think there's...
I don't like it because it's a hidden subsidy.
I believe it.
But that's what I would say. But one thing I think our listener would find interesting, you know, there is no state in the country with a more equal distribution of income than Utah.
Mm. And why is that?
I think it's because of social capital. I think it's
I thought you were going to say socialism.
No, I think it's because we have a state that takes care of its people. And we do that through networks of trust and social capital.
I would
favor education, to your point.
I have been thinking about this with the number of folks that are on SNAP in our state, for example, which I believe the last report that I read said it was about 180,000 individuals, right? Or is that families? Maybe that's families. But the point is, this is not a small amount of people. It's about 5% of our state. I think that number is in some ways depressed because of the presence of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Oh, yeah.
And I do
no
wonder
question about it.
What
I mean,
would
we
happen?
Run an exquisite and well-funded private welfare system in
and
this
so
state.
As much as I kind of hear the criticisms around welfare, I just have to say we have like sort of a shadow welfare system across this entire state for those who have access to it. And I think that feels tough to me, right? Like, so if you're not part of that faith or if you feel uncomfortable accessing it for any reasons that may be tied to your own personal religious beliefs, the fact that we do not have as robust of a public welfare system in the state as we should have is troubling to me.
Yeah. John, anything more on that?
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things that I think is good about the LDS welfare system is it helps folks get back on their feet. That's the purpose, is to try and get folks back on their feet. Unfortunately, too often in the government welfare system, it's how do we keep people on the system?
Yeah.
And sometimes you even see government workers teaching people how to game the system to stay on it.
Yeah.
Or you see people saying, Walmart or whoever, don't give me that raise because I want these benefits.
Yeah. I don't think people are saying quite that. But I agree that these could be run better.
Yeah. Hey, just as we close, let's extend a congratulations to Marcia Judkins, who defeated incumbent Michelle Cafusi as the provost's next mayor.
Yeah. I think she'll be a great mayor.
That's a big change. I really liked.
Well, and the race was really tight also up in Park City. My friend lost by just a few votes.
Is that right?
It was a really close
I really
race.
Admired Mayor Cafusi, but I'm sure she'll go do other big things.
Yeah.
All right. Let's have that be a wrap. Thanks, everybody, for the conversation. Shireen Gorbani, John Dougal, Natalie Gochner. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everyone, for listening.